Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Well, a week from Thursday, President Bush will be inaugurated for his second term, and corporations are very pleased. In fact, they have ponied up some $40 million to pay for the event, and I'm sure they're doing it entirely out of the goodness of their heart, not because they expect anything back, or do they? Interestingly, while corporations are footing the tab for much of the cost, the District of Columbia taxpayers have to pay for security. Yes, the District of Columbia, the one area in the United States that is yet to be free, that is yet to have democratic representation in Congress, the one area of the country that is a colony rather than a free, independent state like the other 50 states, yes, they're apparently going to have to foot the bill for the first time in history for the inauguration, for $17.3 million in security for things like the parade route and things like the many, many presidential balls. In fact, the government has basically told the district, take a hike, use those funds that you use to protect yourself from terrorism, use it to pay for the inauguration. I'm going to address that issue at the end of the broadcast because it's a separate issue from corporations buying our government. But I do think it does happen to be a nice little finger in the eye of District of Columbia residents who voted some 9-1 for John Kerry and still, of course, don't have democracy in the District of Columbia. It's a separate issue. I want to get to my main issue, though, and that is how corporations are buying the president, buying members of Congress. You know, McCain-Feingold was supposed to get rid of the soft money problem, the problem of corporations buying access, but apparently the problem still continues, and there's quite a quid pro quo going on. And I want to invite today someone who knows a lot about this. His name is Bruce Fried. He's the co-director of the Center for Political Accountability. You can find his website linked to mine at www.radioinsidescoop.com. But it is the role of the Center for Political Accountability to watch corporate giving, to see what they're doing. And Bruce Fried is going to come on my show in just a minute and answer your questions as to the scope of the problem, what's really going on, what they're doing to monitor it, what we can do to monitor it, what rights do shareholders have to find out what's going on, maybe to stop it? And what does this all have to do with the Tom DeLay ethics investigation? There's a lot to talk about, and as always, you're invited to call in and question my guest or myself with your calls. All you have to do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or put a comment on the blog, as so many of you like to do, by going to www.radioinsidescoop.com. But first, let me introduce my guest, Bruce Fried, co-director for the Center for Political Accountability. Bruce, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, tell me a little bit about your organization and what you do.
The Center was founded in October of 2003 to bring transparency and accountability to corporate political giving. I had been writing a column for the Hill newspaper on business and politics, and one of the things that had really concerned me as I took a look at business's role in the political process was the role of soft money, companies giving campaign contributions with corporate funds, the fact that these contributions really, in many cases, went against shareholder interests, and that individuals, shareholders, really knew nothing about this because the companies were not required to disclose their contributions. So what I did is, with a colleague of mine, created the center, and we decided that we would really focus on shareholders because shareholders really should be the ones who know how companies are using money that they invest in the companies. What we did is we drafted a shareholder resolution that was very simple. It called on companies to disclose the soft money contributions that they were making, that's contributions with corporate funds, explain the business rationale for the contribution, and identify the corporate officers involved in making the decisions. You know, we viewed these as ways to bring transparency and accountability to corporate political giving.
I suspect you've gotten some resistance to this.
Well, the results have been very interesting. Of course, there's been a great deal of resistance. You know, we went to various institutional investors who are interested in this, and they filed a resolution. Quite a few companies fought it. They asked the staff at the Securities and Exchange Commission to reject the resolutions. Very, hearteningly, the SEC staff said, no, this resolution stands, and so it went before shareholders of about 25 companies.
Now, what I find very interesting, and I want to sort of try to understand the scope of the problem here, is when you look at corporate political giving, it's an interesting problem, because when corporations give money, obviously they're not giving the personal money of the CEO. They're giving the money of the shareholders.
Yes.
And it seems to me that you just can divide it. Either it works, either it buys political influence and money given back to the corporation, or it doesn't. And what I've always said to anyone who supports this kind of thing is, let's say that you're actually buying something, that giving the money gets your return back. That, in a less dignified way, would be called bribery. You pay a politician, you get money back from the politician. That is bribery. That should be illegal. And I've heard people say, well, okay, no, it doesn't really buy anything. So I say, if it doesn't buy anything, then that's malfeasance. That's incompetence. If a corporation pays money and puts $100 million in a hole, right, and gives it away, and it doesn't give anything back to the corporation, then they're incompetent. So either it's bribery, which is illegal, or it's incompetent, in which case the executive should be thrown out the window. Where am I wrong in my logic?
Well, I think your logic is absolutely right. Let me deal with one quick thing first, then we'll get to that. You asked about the issue of soft money and McCain-Feingold.
Yeah.
McCain-Feingold prohibited soft money contributions to political party committees, but McCain-Feingold has not banned soft money to independent political committees. Those would be of the types of those would be 527 committees or groups like Swift Boats that attacked Kerry. Those are 527. So companies can still give soft money to 527 committees, independent political committees. Companies can also give soft money in states where corporate contributions are allowed. So soft money is still alive and well. Now, in terms of what you're asking about, the contributions, whether they're malfeasance or bribery, I think that's a very critical point that you're making. We are wrapping up a report at the center on corporate political contributions and the risks that they pose to shareholder value. Nobody has looked at this, and we have taken a look at how soft money contributions can facilitate corporate mismanagement or misbehavior, how they can create reputational problems for companies.
You know, to even ask the question puts the corporations in a catch-22, because if they're making money back, it's bribery, and if they're not, it's malfeasance. It seems to me such a basic question, and I don't hear it posed very often.
Well, there's a third thing, too. There's extortion, because you have some elected officials who basically will shake down companies. If a company doesn't give, then it runs the risk of having things done to it that could harm it or being unable to protect itself, its interests. So you have malfeasance, bribery, or extortion.
And yet all of this is legal. I mean, to me, the scandal is not so much what's illegal as what's legal.
Oh, yeah. This is a very serious problem, and it's a problem that you've had for a long time. You know, we have turned the spotlight on this. We are now beginning to get companies to recognize that it's a problem, that it's something that they need to address. Our shareholder resolutions have done that, because we had a major breakthrough in mid-December when Morgan Stanley, a major investment banker in New York, agreed to disclose its soft money contributions on its website and to have its board of directors oversee its contributions and contribution policies. That's very important, because that's beginning to bring transparency and accountability to political giving.
Agreed, Bruce?
Yes?
Yeah, let me go to a caller on the line that's been hanging on. If you want to dial in and ask questions, all you have to do is call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Bruce Fried.
Hey, gentlemen, it's West Coast Dave, and a big fan and admirer.
Hello, West Coast Dave. Go ahead.
Let me say this, Bruce. This is an experience that I have discovered for myself. Big corrupt corporation contributes money to the Republican and Democratic Party. They, in turn, have bought the right to rip off their customers without any accountability from government at any level. I don't know if I'm making this sense, but I've experienced this with Travelers Express, Allstate Insurance, Providian Bank. They contribute to both parties. Both parties, in effect, agree, do your thing and we'll turn our backs.
What's your question, Dave? Does Bruce agree with you? Is that your question?
Is he knowledgeable on what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Bruce, why don't you tell us how a corporation, what is the quid pro quo? I mean, how do they buy the politician, and what do they get back for it?
You know, I don't think it's in some cases it's explicit. I spent 10 years working on Capitol Hill on the House and Senate side, so I saw the whole contribution game. In some cases, it's close to explicit. It's never put in writing, but the fact is there is that very visible understanding of what a company is going to get for its contributions. In other cases, it's getting the access, creating the goodwill. It's just basically, one could say, putting money in the bank to draw down on when they need to have problems dealt with. You know, I think it's a very serious problem. It really does skew the whole legislative and policy-making process.
So, Dave, does that answer your question? I mean,
well, it's specific to me is that these corporations, once they've made these contributions, if they choose, they can and do cheat their customers out of several hundred dollars at a whack, and you as the victim citizen will get no help whatsoever from the Federal Trade Commission. You will not get any help from any elected Democrat or Republican at any level. It is in the computer that their party, whichever it won, has taken the big payoff, and they are not to look into anything that they do.
Well, Dave,
one of the things that's interesting, by the way, is how little it costs to basically buy some of the elected officials. When you take a look at contributions in the $10,000 range, $20,000 range, $50,000 range, even when you're getting up into soft money at $100,000, when a company is getting tax breaks that can be worth several million or several hundred million, I'm always astounded at what a tremendous return.
It's a bargain. It's a bargain. You pay
$100,000
down, you get $100 million back. That's 1,000 times return on your money.
You see, GE is a great practitioner of that.
Tell us what GE is doing.
Well, GE in the last tax bill, it may have been several hundred thousand dollars, but I think that the tax break that they got that they got in the bill went into the billions.
Into the billions.
The
so billions. That's a great return. I mean, that's for every dollar down, you get $10,000 back. Yeah. I wish I could get that return in Vegas.
So do I.
I do want to, though, disagree a bit with my caller, Dave. I don't think that every politician is on the take, and I'm going to put in a plug in for my former boss. And he's not the only person, but Congressman Barney Frank is the ranking Democratic member of the Financial Services Committee. So he is the lead Democrat watching the banks. And I think, I don't know of anyone who's – Barney Frank may have his own scandals, but no one has ever questioned his probity with regard to banks, financial services. And I can tell you, as someone who's worked in his office, we were told to attend to our constituents. We were told to attend to an immigrant in need of help. As much as the banks, and I don't think that, just to give you one example, Mr. Frank is giving any favors to banks. So there are some honest politicians still out there.
I worked for Bill Proxmire, the senator from Wisconsin, who was really a great symbol of rectitude. I was chief investigator on the Senate Banking Committee for him. And I found that the senator was an ethical person. And, there are some members of Congress who are like that, and I think there are fewer than I wish we had, but I would not paint all of the elected senators and representatives with the brush of being cash and carry.
I'll tell you something else that's going on in Congress, Dave, and this may address your issue. Unfortunately, it addresses it in the wrong direction. But you're absolutely right that the federal commissions, Federal Trade Commission, FCC, all the main commissions, the SEC, to some extent, though, thankfully to a lesser extent, to the extent that they're supposed to watch over these corporations and regulate them and keep them from messing with their consumers like they shouldn't be, that they're not doing their job. But one of the ways to get back is good old lawsuits, doing things like class actions, where if a bank or a credit card company is taking $1 or $2 or $5 in late fees that they have no right to take because your payment wasn't late, and they're doing it across thousands and tens of thousands of consumers, some enterprising lawyer will take that case as a class action and stop those companies. But what you find is in the Republican Congress, now there's legislation to stop class actions because they realize that one route left that consumers still have is to sue the companies, and so Republicans are making sure that no, they can cut off that last escape route. So they're looking for every way they can to do that.
One last thought for you, Mark.
Yep.
If you still have any contact with Bonnie Franks, if you would ask him off the record, if you get a constituent who writes you that he's just been ripped off by Dell Computer, Allstate, or Providian Bank, can you look into it? And I'll bet you you'll be surprised at what his answer will be.
No, let me tell you something, and I know because I used to work in his office. We had casework all the time. It was for constituents. Obviously, if you're, you know, he can't do that for 300 million Americans, but for his constituents who lived in southeastern Massachusetts, he did look into those things to see if someone was being ripped off and to see particularly if there was a law. Because if it's, you know, if there's a law that was corruptly hurting people, like the example I gave of late fees or usurious interest, very high interest rates, things like that, Barney did look into it. And I have to tell you, there are members of Congress who do.
Yep.
So I don't get me wrong. I totally agree with you, Dave, that a big part of our government is on the take, and I decry it. But I just want to let you know there are some honest people out there. And I should say they're not only in the Democratic Party, too. One Republican who I have some respect for example, is Chris Shays of Connecticut. But it is a problem, and it's a growing problem because you have people like Tom DeLay, who run the Republican Party, who's the biggest guy on the take of them all, and we're going to explore that a little bit later on in the broadcast.
They just don't get that evil. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks very much for your call, Dave. We have to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to explore why McCain-Feingold didn't stop this. We thought it was going to. Was it of any help at all? What's going on in the inauguration? What are corporations giving and getting? And that last bit, how does Tom DeLay, the House Majority Leader, what's his role in this whole process? All those questions and more, all you have to do to join in the discussion is pick up your phone and dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about corporations and how they buy influence in Washington. Of course, we're about to go to another presidential inauguration, and corporations are spending tens of millions of dollars on ways to celebrate the president. Are they doing it out of their own good heart because they just like to make the president happy and make his balls go well, or are they getting something for it? My guest, by the way, let me announce him again, is Bruce Fried. He's the co-director of the Center for Political Accountability, and he's on the air to answer your questions at 877-57-SCOOP. Bruce, tell me, when a company buys an inauguration ball or sponsors a ball or something like that, they give money to a fund. How does it work?
I think there's a fund that's set up to underwrite the inauguration activities, and they solicit contributions from individuals and from companies. You also have trade associations. It's the well-heeled who give, whether it's corporate or individual. I think a key thing to understand is that in events like this, companies are not asking for anything explicit when they give the money, but what they get is access, and that's both companies and wealthy individuals who have various interests to pursue. That access is absolutely critical because it allows a lobbyist, it allows a top corporate executive, it allows an individual to be able to cozy up next to a decision maker, a policy maker at one of these events, kibitz, and then say, By the way,
there's a tax bill that if you let me just put three lines in, it'll be you'll hardly notice it.
You know,
happens to save my company $100 million in taxpayer money.
It's a variety of things. It's a tax bill. It may be a regulatory measure. The fact is, by the way, is the way that these guys and girls and gals will get things done.
Now, Bruce, what is the scope of the problem, and how much money are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, for the inauguration, you're looking at about $36 to $40 million. I think, for the campaign, this campaign, by the way, was a very interesting campaign, the last presidential campaign, because you did have parity between the Democrats and the Republicans because of McCain-Feingold. By blocking soft money for the presidential race, you had both parties raising hard money. I think for companies, that has meant that there are other ways that they pump money into the political process. You do get it through the inauguration. You are going to get it also, I think, through various trade associations. There were very interesting articles in the Los Angeles Times and Wall Street Journal last week about the National Association of Manufacturers announcing that they are going to be launching a multi-million-dollar campaign to aid the White House to get their extreme right-wing judicial nominees confirmed. That is something that's a very, very significant development, because up to now, business has stayed away from social issues. It has not gotten into the abortion fight. It has not gotten into into the issue of gay rights. They eschew that. But I think, you know, now you have NAM, which is going to be raising money from its members, I assume, to do this. When the papers talked about a multi-million-dollar campaign, I know the way association budgets are put together, they're going to have to go to companies and say, we need extra money to do this. So we have political money that is now entering the process. We have, you know, company money entering the political process through various different ways. And I think it's very important that the public know where this money is coming from, what companies are spending their money on, and especially shareholders, because it's shareholder money that's being used.
What's interesting to me is, of course, these social issues, abortion or the like, they don't affect corporations. I mean, whether someone has an abortion or not doesn't affect whether Exxon makes a profit or not, and yet they're weighing in on these issues, I assume, to curry favor with an administration that supports these issues.
Yeah, well, they're weighing in because the administration is saying these are judges who support tort reform, which means making it much more difficult people to making it much more difficult for people to use the courts as a remedy to deal with their problems. And so what you have is nominees who would support tort reform, and then they come with a great deal of other baggage, whether it's on reproductive rights, whether it's on gay rights, on a whole slew of other issues. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the effect of this is, because this can create very serious reputational problems for companies.
Now, here's what I'm trying to understand, and I think some of our listeners are too. McCain-Feingold was billed as a very good thing, and I tend to still think that it is. I mean, McCain-Feingold was bitterly fought back by the Republicans. The Republicans, in fact, would not allow it to come to a vote the House or the Senate. They had to use an extraordinary process that's used maybe once every 10, 15 years to absolutely force the leadership against their will to bring it to a vote. And so the Democrats really wanted this political money reform. Most Republicans did not. A few broke away to support it. Obviously, Senator McCain is Republican, as is Chris Shays of Connecticut.
Right.
And yet, despite all of this, we still have the corporate soft money going on. So let me ask you in detail, what good did McCain-Feingold do at all? Did it do some good? And why did it not fail to prevent this continued giving?
McCain-Feingold is limited, because it addressed the problem of soft money. That means unlimited amounts of corporate money and unlimited contributions of individual money going to the political party committees. This would be to the Democratic National Committee, to the Republican National Committee, to the Senate Campaign Committee, the House Campaign Committees. But it did not address the issue of corporate soft money contributions, individual soft money contributions to independent political committees, the 527s.
Also,
McCain-Feingold did not address the issue of disclosure, because it's very important to remember, companies are not required to disclose, to report the contributions, the political contributions that they make with corporate funds.
Okay, well, let me divide it into two questions then. The first is, what good did it do? Did McCain-Feingold do some good? Was it helpful in some regards?
I think it was very helpful, because when you take a look at this last presidential race, even with an outcome that some of us were quite disappointed with, you finally had the Democrats reaching parity with the Republicans, so you had a race fought, I think, on more equal terms. Because the Democrats...
And how did McCain-Feingold do this?
Because McCain-Feingold forced both parties to rely on individual donors and to use hard money to finance the campaigns. So the Democrats, who for many, many, many years had been unable to develop a base of small donors, finally developed that small donor base.
But, Bruce, some would argue that the reason why the parties were in parity this time in money was not because of the hard money donations, but because of the, and I guess they're soft money, correct me if I'm wrong, contributions of people like George Soros and others on the left to fund groups to make it more equal.
If you take a look at the hard money contributions to both parties, to Bush and to Kerry, were really quite close.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In other words, if you cut out the 527s in both parties, the Swift Boat ads and the groups like MoveOn.org that George Soros contributed to, it would leave the parties still in rough parity?
I think it left them in rough parity.
Now tell me this. Why did McCain-Feingold leave – these 527s alone. 4 years ago, none of us had heard of 527. We thought it was just a number.
527s were around, but the fact is you always find campaign finance reform is very much like squeezing a balloon. You can squeeze it in at one area, and basically the air will move to another area and balloon out. Or it's like water going downhill. You know, if you dam it up in one area, water always finds a way to get downhill. So, you know, with campaign finance reform, you do one thing, it leads basically to compensating change.
So would you say that this wasn't purposeful on the part of McCain-Feingold? They just overlooked this loophole?
The fact is, you know, these guys really don't know what unintended consequences are. And so you always have the various lawyers and strategists who are there looking at how to exploit, little openings, which they turn into major loopholes.
Well, what's to prevent us from being a pessimist and saying, well, you know, if we close 527, suddenly we're going to hear about 816s, which is a number I just made up.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, the fact is you do one thing, it's going to lead to another.
Okay.
I think, by the way, when you talk about McCain-Feingold, one of the things that's very interesting is that by allowing 527s to engage in independent expenditures, I think that this does create problems for campaigns, because it means that the candidate or the party really has less control over the campaign. That you do have this whole issue of coordination. Now, the Republicans seem to have really finessed this very well, because when you take a look at the Swift Boat ads, there was implicit coordination between the Swift Boat gang and the Bush campaign.
Oh, sure. You had a lawyer Ben Ginsburg for the Swift Boat vets that was the same lawyer for the Republican National Committee. And conveniently, I can tell you as a lawyer, I think most of us know that attorney-client communications are privileged. So they can actually communicate through their lawyer to each other, and there's absolutely no way to find it out.
You don't even have to communicate through your lawyer. I mean, the fact is these guys are part of the same circuit. They're talking all the time, off the record, on the record, and basically they know what's going to be helpful.
Okay, but let me back up, because I see what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying, but I also believe there is a role for groups of individuals, and I don't think corporations, because, and in fact, coming after the break, I want to talk about whether corporations are truly persons or not, as they've been held by the Supreme Court for more than 100 years. I want to get to that decision when we come back. But let me just ask you this. It seems to me that while corporations, I think, can be completely regulated under the law, I don't call them persons. I don't care that much about them, frankly. They're a creature of law, and they can do whatever we say, I think. I'll get to that. But my question is, private individuals, I do care about. And if a group of American citizens want to get together, I don't care whether they're pro-choice, pro-life, pro-guns, pro-gun control. It does seem to me that a group of Americans getting together with a common view on any political issue should be able to donate to a candidate who supports that political issue, whether right or left. Do you agree with me on that? And do you think we can prevent corporate contributions while still protecting American individuals' rights to advocate for whatever position they have?
You can go ahead and prohibit corporate contributions. The problem is that I think since companies have been construed as individuals, then they have free speech protection. They're protected under the First Amendment. I would argue that what you really need to do is require companies to disclose the contributions they're making with corporate money. Disclosure can be very therapeutic, very much like sunshine, because you find, I think, in many instances, that when there is disclosure, it has an inhibiting effect. A company will sometimes do something if it knows that it will not be disclosed. If there is disclosure, they're going to say, you know what, this could have an effect on a reaction, create a reaction from stakeholders, from this and that group. It's not worth the grief that we're going to get.
But, Bruce, disclosure, I mean, it's very easy. You have disclosure. Yes, this bill is sponsored by the Committee for a Free and Clean Environment. And who's the Committee for a Free and Clean Environment? It's all the polluters.
No, but I'm saying, I think what you need to do is require companies to disclose where they're giving their money. There has to be disclosure so you can track the money all the way along and know, you know, what the ultimate destination is of that corporate contribution. You know, the Center for Political Accountability has done that, and that has had some very telling effects on companies. You know, we disclosed the fact that a contribution given by Union Pacific, the big railroad company, to a group called Americans for Republican Majority, that $75,000 that Union Pacific gave to Americans for Republican Majority, some of that money ended up at a group called the Traditional Values Coalition. Well, Union Pacific did not like when we put out a press release saying that Union Pacific money ended up at the Traditional Values Coalition. And it's that
because people who don't support the moral majority Christian fundamentalism may not want to ride on their railroad.
Well, because you know you have a reputation problem for the company. Union Pacific provides partner benefits. The Traditional Values Coalition is strongly opposed to gay rights. Union Pacific does not like that type of conflict to be public.
I see. Now, but you do think there's a way that, and so you, I guess you wouldn't ban corporate contributions. You would just have them be disclosed. I'm trying to understand your position here.
No. We're calling for disclosure. We're calling for disclosure and accountability. We feel that companies should be required to disclose on their websites where their money is going. We feel that companies need to have accountability internally. They need to have executive level review of contributions and contribution decisions. We feel that the board of directors needs to be involved with that. We also feel that companies really should have a disclosure of the rationale of the contributions. I mean, that gets to the point that you were talking about earlier of whether a contribution is malfeasance, bribery, or extortion.
It's a fair question. We're going to go to another commercial break. I have to say that I respect what you do, Bruce. I don't think you go far enough. I understand that disclosure is a first step, and it may be all we can get. I'm more than aware that sometimes you have to politically compromise with half a loaf. But I would go farther. I would completely ban corporate contributions because no one can explain to me logically why they are not either bribery, extortion, or malfeasance. If you can do that, please call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Tell me how any of this stuff is justified on anything else other than bribery, extortion, or malfeasance. Why are these things being allowed at all? Bruce Fried is trying to monitor it, trying to force disclosure. That's a good thing. But why can't we just ban it entirely? We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Federal student loans. It's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And my guest today is Bruce Fried. He's the co-director of the Center for Political Accountability, and we're talking about corporate giving, how it is that corporate soft money continues to influence and control our government. If you want to call in, we always appreciate your calls. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Bruce, I want to ask about Tom DeLay. This is a guy who, down in Texas, took a lot of money from corporations to gerrymander the Texas lines, and in fact, it's entirely due to his gerrymander that the Republicans won seats in the House in this election. Had he not redrawn the lines in such skewed ways, the Democrats would have actually gained seats in the most recent election. How does the actions of Tom DeLay, how does this relate to the whole question of corporate giving?
I think it relates very significantly because you have Tom DeLay, who really has created Tom DeLay Inc., that has really refined, one could say almost perfected, the art of getting companies to part with their money. When you take a look at two independent political committees that he ran in the past, Americans for a Republican Majority and Texans for a Republican Majority, those have been his chief financing arms. They have given him the largesse for him to pursue his agenda, whether it's the policy agenda or the political agenda. So money has been central to what he has done. And the fact is, before, when you asked about contributions that had quid pro quos, there's an interesting one involving a company, a utility out of Kansas, Westar Energy, where you had essentially a quid pro quo money that was given to DeLay and several DeLay entities, to several members of Congress, and in return the company got a chance to play in a conference on the energy bill back in 2002. That was a clear case of pay to play, and has led to the indictment of the company.
Now, of course, what interests me is that in Texas, it's illegal for corporations to give money to politicians. It's been illegal for 100 years in Texas, and yet Tom DeLay got the money anyway. How does that work?
Well, I mean, that's why you had several companies that were indicted for their contributions to Texans for a Republican Majority. You had companies like Sears Roebuck. You had Cracker Barrel. There were several other companies that gave, and they're now in Texas, they allow corporate contributions to be used in political campaigns for very, very limited purposes. But the fact is, in DeLay's case, those the overhead of the operation was so thin that it was obvious that the corporate money that was given went right into the kitty to pay for the races. You know, you have a case of the corporate contributions to Tom DeLay's Americans for a Republican Majority. And the money from Americans for a Republican Majority was transferred to Texans for a Republican Majority. I've argued to some folks that this was a case of money laundering. So you have a real problem of that money seeping in. And, you asked before about making the corporate contributions illegal.
Yeah.
You know, corporate contributions are illegal to federal candidates.
Already.
So, I mean, a company could not give to a Senate candidate, to a House candidate, to a presidential candidate. It's only personal money that is allowed.
They can't give directly, but they can give indirectly.
They can give indirectly through their political action committees.
So, I mean, that's what I'm saying, that you could ban. Why not say to corporations, because this money can only be used for ill, you simply cannot give money to help a political candidate? And maybe not even run ads. Does this go back to the question of whether corporations are persons or not?
I mean,
let me address that question real quick if I could, because I am a lawyer. And I think this really surprises people. And let me, and I, Skip brought it up on my blog, and so I wanted to give a chance to talk about it. Back in 1886, this is some 20 years after the 14th Amendment became law. The 14th Amendment became law, part of the Constitution, right after the Civil War. And it gives all persons in America equal protection under the law.
Which decision was that? That's the slaughterhouse cases?
No, no. The slaughterhouse cases were much later. I think that's this is a decision back, I think it's Santa Clara Railroad, back in 1886. And this is a decision that said that corporations are persons. Now, I don't think anyone, when they passed the 14th Amendment and they said persons, I think they meant someone who lives and breathes and eats and sleeps. I don't think they meant a corporation. It's very interesting to me that corporations, it seems to me, are legal fictions. They are a creation that we use to help the economy, I guess. And they do some good, I guess. But since they're entirely a legal fiction, a creation of the government, I think they can be entirely controlled by the government. But the United States Supreme Court has held for more than 100 years that corporations are persons, and they have the right to free speech, as you pointed out, and all these other rights. And frankly, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. It has absolutely no logic. And if you're a strict constructionist, as I am, if you believe in the letter of the law, you have to believe that the corporations don't have protections under the 14th Amendment. I don't know if you have a comment on that.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I remember those decisions by the Supreme Court in the late 1800s that gave the gave corporations basically person status, and those were very, very significant in terms of giving corporations the power to do things, the authority to do things that that I think are highly questionable.
Yeah.
So I
don't think we the people includes corporations. We the people, every individual in America and GE and IBM, all of us, in order to form a more perfect union, somehow I just don't think they were included in there with the founders.
I'm taking a look at Richard Morris's Encyclopedia of American History. It was the Santa Clara Rail case give coverage of protection of the 14th Amendment to companies as persons.
And it's amazing to me because I studied in Switzerland. I studied legal law in Switzerland, and they talked about the French and German systems. Mm-hmm. And in Germany, apparently, the corporations are treated just like persons. But in France, they say, no, this is a fiction. It is a legal fiction. We created it. They're creatures of the state, and so the state can regulate them as they please.
I think you do have a very serious problem today of abuse of power, and you have the abuse of power that really is coming out of this White House and this administration. It's aided and abetted by a Congress that really is complicit in this abuse. Congress is really not carrying out its constitutional responsibility of providing a check and a balance and conducting oversight of the executive branch. You have abuse of power by companies, and again, there is no check on that either from regulatory agencies today, except maybe for the Securities and Exchange Commission, and I think that's weakening. Clearly, there's none from Congress, and that's why I think the effort that we are undertaking to get companies to disclose and account for the contributions is extremely important, because you really have to go outside the formal political process to start developing these checks and balances. I think when we talk about disclosure, one of the problems that you have with disclosure is that there are people who look at disclosure and say, well, disclosure in and of itself is therapeutic and is going to be helpful. We believe in active disclosure, where you have a company tell where its money is going, but then that needs to be put in context so that shareholders and the public know what that means, know what the implications are, know how it affects them. That's why, we are pursuing our agenda this way, because we feel that this type of active disclosure, almost advocacy disclosure, is very, very important to create another check and balance.
Bruce, let me go to a listener who's hanging on the line. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Bruce Fried.
This is Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed.
And I would like to suggest something to your guest.
It seems to me that that one way to solve the problem is through the legislature. Corporations are all creatures of the state. Each individual state creates a corporation. And if the Bruce's group would spend some time lobbying the state of Delaware, where most national corporations are incorporated, the Delaware legislature could pass a law requiring corporations to put that information in their reports to the shareholders. And corporations send out reports, most big corporations send out reports quarterly or at least annually. And if they do that, or in each individual state, that might clean up the mess right off the bat.
Ed, here's my problem, and then I'll pass the question on to Bruce. My problem is that I think the reason why Delaware is the home of so many corporations is it's a race to the bottom.
Yep.
Delaware is there purposely to help corporations escape accountability, and if Delaware were to suddenly increase its standards, then they'd go to South Dakota or Nevada or some other place.
Mississippi or Alabama.
Or some other place, and unless you get a federal standard, there's really nothing you can do about some state wanting to get in those corporate revenues and doing so by basically helping the corporations mistreat their shareholders. I got it right, Bruce?
And I think, you had several state and city treasurers who wrote William Donaldson, chairman of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, asking him to initiate a rulemaking proceeding that would require companies to disclose contributions to shareholders. I think, that clearly, if you're looking for regulatory relief, is a much better approach because it's national.
Well, and maybe I disagree with your guess, but I happen to think that, there is something called the uniform state laws, and if this was put into the uniform corporate laws, which are across the country, I think it would help. And
I hear you, Ed.
It's difficult to achieve, though, given what Mark said in terms of Delaware's interest in keeping keeping the legal requirements as minimal as possible, as loose as favorable as possible to companies.
Thanks for your call, Ed. I appreciate it. I'll tell you, I think that that's one of the reasons why Delaware, this tiny little state that really isn't exactly an engine of commerce, one doesn't think of Delaware in that way, that's precisely why they hold themselves out to corporations, because they're a small state. That's how they get their money, basically by ripping off all the other states. In fact, there's a great article in the New Republic about a year back called The Worst State in the Union, all about how Delaware, it really is ripping us all off by incorporating these things. Frankly, the same thing happens on a national scale. You find, why do you think ships are always in Liberia or the Bahamas? Because their registry requirements are very small, and it's a race to the bottom, and that's why I think we need a national response. Bruce, we got one more commercial break, but when we come back, I want to I don't think Ed's solution works, but I want to hear from you what you think people can do to fight this scourge of corporate giving. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me!
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you, on some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical help, and then there's financial help. With Score Power from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico, 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've just got a few minutes left with our guest, Bruce Fried, co-director of the Center for Political Accountability. Bruce, it's easy to knock down ideas as not working to say that McCain-Feingold isn't working completely. I myself just knocked down an idea of one of our callers saying that we can help Delaware because I don't think Delaware will do anything about it. Tell me, please, what can we do as voters, as shareholders, to help get our government back?
I think there are some very specific things that individuals can do. The center will be engaging shortly in a joint effort with Common Cause to put pressure on mutual funds to cast their proxies for political disclosure resolutions at companies where the resolution is on the ballot. You know, we will be asking Common Cause members and the public to contact the mutual fund, their mutual funds, and urge the funds to vote for the political disclosure resolution. That's a very simple thing to do, but it's extremely important because what you're doing is really multiplying voices. There's a real multiplier effect from that. I think that that individuals who are shareholders in companies should write their companies and ask them to tell them to you know, to disclose their contributions and to set up systems to account for them, to have accountability in how they make the contribution decisions. I think those are very important things to do. I think you need to urge your members of Congress to support regulations, you know, through the Securities and Exchange Commission requiring companies to disclose their contributions.
Now, and I have to say, again, that disclosure is just a first step. I'd like to see this stuff out of the process altogether, but at a minimum, how can anyone argue that disclosure is a bad idea? Bruce, I have one more call on the line. I want to see if I can give him a quick chance to say something. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Bruce Fried.
Hey, Mark, I think one thing you touched on, I just heard you briefly touch on, is the whole idea of corporate personhood.
Yes.
Have you heard of Tom Hartman?
I certainly have, a fellow fellow talk show host.
Yes, absolutely. He's got a great book on equal protection, talks about it all, and that, I think, is what you're trying to say is the root of the problem.
Well, you know, the problem with that problem is it gives constitutional status to these corporate rights. And, of course, it's ironic to me that all these conservative justices who claim to believe in strict constructionism and you gotta follow the language of the law, mm-hmm. somehow for them, person, which seems to me means person, for them means individual or corporation. They don't seem to believe in strict construction very much when it comes to that language, which is why I think that Scalia and others, frankly, are big hypocrites. But I have to say that's not the entire problem, because it's not just a question of the constitutional rights. It's a question of simple things like what Bruce Fried's talking about, and that is disclosure, letting people know what they're doing. And that's something that I think you can require of all businesses, whether or not we overturn this very bad decision from 100 years ago.
But if the corporations were not allowed to contribute to political parties, then there wouldn't be any need for disclosure.
Well, the problem actually is that there are laws prohibiting corporations. In fact, it dates back to Teddy Roosevelt. There's a federal law prohibiting corporations from giving to federal campaigns. As we mentioned, down in Texas, there are laws prohibiting them from giving to state campaigns, mm-hmm. but they're still doing it. They're finding loopholes. And as I argue on my blog, sometimes what's legal is more scandalous than what's illegal. They are finding ways to seep into the process. I think you're right, though, to some extent, caller, that all you have to do, if we were to enforce these laws strenuously, if we had a government that truly wanted to stop this kind of thing, we could go by the spirit of these laws and really punish these corporations.
That's right, and this is something that, you know, being a lone Democrat down here in the Deep South, most people just aren't aware of the issue.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. You're down in Atlanta, right?
Yep, south of that even.
South of Atlanta. Well,
even redder.
Fair enough. Well, let people know about it. That's part of what this broadcast is all about. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks.
Bruce, we're just about out of time, and I did want to make a comment at the end of the broadcast about the District of Columbia. So let me end with you here by thanking you for coming on air, thanking you for doing what you do. There are not many people out there that are watching this kind of thing, and all I can say, I guess, is watch your back. Make sure those GE goons don't come after you.
Well, I appreciate this, and thanks, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
I do want to make a comment about the inauguration, because it is striking to me that with all the corporations, as we talked about, giving $40 million to pay the tab, every single president, dating back to the beginning, has had a special appropriation for the District of Columbia. And I realize this is a national show, but we come out of the District of Columbia, and I think it's important for all Americans, if you don't realize this, you've got to know. The District of Columbia is the one place in America that does not have democracy. The people who elect their mayor in Washington, D.C., can be overruled by Congress. And the District of Columbia does not have a representative in Congress. The person they elect, Eleanor Holmes Norton, does not have a right to vote. It is the only area of the country that does not have a right to democracy, and the federal government is sticking D.C. with $17.3 million in security costs, which they've never done before. Part of this, I think, is because the District of Columbia went 9-1 for Kerry. Bush didn't even get 10% in the District of Columbia. So I say, D.C., if they won't pay for security, tough it. It's the president. It's his idea. Don't provide so much security. Tell the president, if you want security, you get your own Secret Service agents to protect you. If you won't provide security for your own self, don't impose it on the one area of the country that has taxation without representation. District residents have every right to be very angry about this. And I say, D.C., you know what? Just withhold security. Let some other cops do the job. It may be harsh, but it's one way of letting the president know that